You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret is out this week. Coming up, it's Latino USA. Tonight, a look at some of the political stories that aren't as obvious, from the difference in coverage between English and Spanish language reporting to why it's hard to accurately gather data about Latinos. Plus, a report on the overlooked state races in Florida. That's tonight at 7 on Latino USA. First, this weekend, the United States suffered the deadliest terror attack on U.S. soil since September 11th. The shooter opened fire at a popular LGBT club in Orlando, killing 49 and injuring more than 50 people. This weekend also marked a disturbing trend in domestic terrorism, the use of the high-capacity semi-automatic rifle, in the case of the Orlando shooter, a Sig Sauer MCX rifle. Furthermore, mass shootings and terrorism have also seemingly shifted from high-profile targets like government buildings to soft targets like a nightclub or a movie theater, as we saw this weekend. Joining us now to talk about this weekend's shooting and how terror is evolving is James Allen Fox. He's the Lippman Family Professor of Criminology, Law, and Public Policy at Northeastern University. James, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Well, a recent Washington Post article pointed to the convergence of terrorism and what its author called American-style mass shootings. Are mass shootings uniquely American?
No, there are mass shootings in other countries, England, Germany, virtually anywhere around the world. Of course, we have more than our fair share, so we don't have a monopoly, but we certainly have cornered the market on it, unfortunately. I want to say one thing at the start here, based on your opening. I think we're all too quick to call these incidents terrorism. Terrorism is the use of violence or the threat of violence to gain some political or other kind of objective. These are individuals generally who aren't trying to advance an agenda. They're angry, bitter, hostile. They want to get even. They feel they've been mistreated somehow. And they want to get some justice. So it's not really terrorism because they're not looking for any cause.
Some would say that a goal of terrorism is to instill fear. And that could be a kind of agenda. Do you agree with that?
No. Well, fear for what purpose? I mean, if you terrorists want us fearful so that we change our lifestyle, inconvenience ourselves like we do in our airports, for some greater purpose. Just instilling fear for fear's sake is not really terrorism. It creates terror, of course, as one synonym of fear. But terrorism is use of violence for some instrumental purpose.
So how would you describe, what words would you use to describe what happened in Orlando?
Rampage. Rage. Now, obviously, and hate, of course. Now, in that case, because he may have identified with jihadist ideology, though he certainly wasn't involved in any terror cell, that may also be incidental. I mean, for example, the Columbine shooters, they were a big fan of Adolf Hitler. They knew nothing about Nazi ideology, but they identified with the power that he represented. In the same way that many people, like this individual, perhaps, identified with the power of ISIS to make himself feel powerful.
So when you look at similar terror attacks of a kind, the San Bernardino shooting, the shootings in Paris at the Bataclan and the coffee shops, how are you defining that? Are you defining that as terrorism?
Yes. I mean, there certainly are some mass killings that are for the sake of some agenda. I mean, and it doesn't necessarily have to be international terrorism. Obviously, the Oklahoma City bombing, although it was a shooting, it was a mass murder, is a form of terrorism to advance a cause. And the Unabomber, although that was more of a serial killing, is a terrorist because he was trying to advance his anti-technology agenda. But most mass killers, they don't have any higher purpose. They want payback. They want to get even. Now, most of them selectively go after certain individuals who they hold responsible for their problems. So a lot of the workplace shootings, for example, is a guy's been fired and he goes back and kills the boss and all the coworkers. Many mass killers go after specific groups of people, not individuals. So Mark Lapine, for example, in Montreal, hated feminists, thought they were taking away all of men's jobs. So he went to the engineering school, told the men to leave the classroom, and then executed the 14 women that were left behind. It's not that he wanted to kill women, because he could have done more damage at the nursing school. He wanted a certain kind of woman. There are the Long Island railroad shooter who was trying to get even with middle-class whites. So there are a number of cases of mass killings that are hate crimes directed towards women or Jews or gays or blacks or immigrants or whites. And then the rarest form of mass killing is the purely random attack, such as the Aurora Theater shooting, where he's not targeting any particular group of people or any particular person, just basically a rampage against society.
The Washington Post article that we started off with was talking about a convergence of a move toward guns.
Yep.
in attacks like these. It may be in an incident that you might call terrorism at the San Bernardino, the Paris attacks, instead of what you might have seen in the past, which was maybe more explosive devices. Are you seeing that guns are being increasingly used as the weapon of choice?
Well, I haven't calculated how many use explosives versus guns, but certainly one of the advantages of a gun for many of these shooters is they get the satisfaction of standing back and watching their victims die one by one, as opposed to a bomb where you may not see anybody actually get killed. So there's a certain psychological element, a power element, to gunning down your victims as opposed to an explosive.
And moving forward, I mean, what might that mean in America as we look at increasingly moving to what you might call soft targets instead of a government building, a military base? So how would guns change the calculations there?
Well, you know, even a military base it doesn't necessarily mean it's a hard target. You know, we saw in the Fort Hood shooting sprees that even though it's a military base, doesn't mean everybody's walking around armed. Same thing with the government building. So there are a lot of soft targets around the country. The only difference is in the case, say, again, such as the McVeigh bombing, his specific agenda was to get back at the government. And other mass killers are looking for other kinds of targets at their workplace. And in fact, most mass killers actually kill within the family. They kill the wife and all the kids. But that's a different kind of mass killing. But they're all mass killings, certainly.
And how would you process what, if anything, is different about what we're seeing both in Orlando and in other recent shootings like the San Bernardino shootings?
Well, the thing that's different, of course, is the identification with ISIS. Most mass killings have nothing to do with politics. They're more personal agendas, personal revenge. In this case, in the Orlando case, you know, we're hearing a lot of talk about his frequenting the club many times and going online looking for men. So there may also be a psychological element as well. And in fact, that may even be more critical in deciding where he went to commit the crime.
So you've talked about the words rage and rampage, and there's the certain element that we don't really know the full story here, the extent that this might be something that was personal, having to do with maybe his sexuality, his mental situation, or whether there's any affiliation with ISIS. But given that, and that this is another mass shooting in America, how do we move to prevent this kind of thing?
Well, it's rather difficult to prevent. No matter what strategy we think of, let's also keep in mind that these are very rare events, and they're not on the rise. We've had, on average, in the United States, about 20 mass shootings of 4 more people killed a year, 20 a year, for the past 30 years. Hasn't been any increase or decrease. Sure, there's been some years where there have been spikes, the 2012, which had the Aurora shooting, as well as Sandy Hook, as well as the Omaha shopping mall. But then numbers went down in the following year. So some years there are spikes, and some years there are fewer. But there's no particular trajectory. The reason why people think that mass killings and mass shootings are on the rise is the nature of how the media can cover these crimes. If you go back a couple decades, when we had just as many, you didn't have all the satellite trucks and the cable news channels able to carry these crimes live, beaming them into your living room, high-definition television, making it feel like it's happening just down the street.
But are they worse now? This was the worst attack like this on American soil.
Well, this one, in terms of the victim count of a shooting, sure it was. But if you make a list of the double-digit shootings, we had double-digit shootings in the 40s in Camden, New Jersey, in the 60s in Austin, Texas, the 70s and the 80s. We had early 80s, there were 2 cases of 13 people shot to death. So, to some extent, you know, this obviously is an aberration. It's the largest. It's not the largest mass killing. Let's also keep that in mind. The Happy Lands fire in New York City, 87 were killed by an arsonist. And, of course, the McVeigh killing of over 160.
James Allen Fox is with us right now. He's a Lippmann Family Professor of Criminology, Law, and Public Policy at Northeastern University. And we're talking about mass shootings, terrorism, and what form attacks are taking these days in the wake of the deadly attack in Orlando this weekend at a popular LGBT nightclub. And we want to hear from you. What are your thoughts following this weekend's shootings? How should we move to address mass shootings? Do you think the media is to blame for making us feel a certain way about them, maybe feeling that they're on the rise? What do you think? Call us at 800-642-1234 or join the conversation on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue with James Allen Fox in just a moment here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation about the form that violence, like this weekend's attack in Orlando, what form that violence is taking and what might be changing right now. And we want to hear from you. What would you like to see change when it comes to mass shootings in the country? What policies would you like to see put in place? And do news reports of attacks like the one about Pulse make you think twice about going to some public places, or do you think it's been overplayed in the media? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave us a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with James Allen Fox. He's a Lippmann Family Professor of Criminology, Law, and Public Policy at Northeastern University. And James, in your book, Extreme Killing, you talk about how some murderers are becoming accustomed to violence through the media. So what role do you think the media plays in incidents like Orlando and others of recent years?
Well, I don't believe that the media encourages killers. Yeah, there is a copycat element to some extent, but all the other conditions have to be there. It's not as if someone sees a shooting at a gay club in Orlando and decides, oh, I think I'm going to do the same thing. But if all the other conditions are there, then there are situations where people will pattern their behavior after another perpetrator. And we saw in the 80s a whole string of Pulse shootings, each one uttering the names of their predecessors. And in the 90s, we saw a whole string of school shootings by disgruntled students, each one patterning their behavior after someone else. So there is copycatting, but I wouldn't blame the media too much there. But where the media does come into play is overplaying the risk, and also the fact that, if you watched the news the other day, I was watching CNN, every third sentence they said this was the largest mass shooting in American history, as if it would not be as tragic if it wasn't the largest. I'm not sure that matters. And also, when we start talking about records and largest and worst, well, records are there to be broken, and unfortunately, that might speak to some other people who want to break the record. We know, for example, that Adam Lanza, at the Sandy Hook shooting, he wanted to outdo his hero, which was the Anders Breivik, the shooter from Norway who killed 77.
If we're talking about violence of historic context, isn't it worth mentioning? Doesn't it point maybe to changes that need to be made to bring people's attention to the fact that something is gone horribly wrong, and maybe the government needs to address it, maybe society needs to address it, maybe we need to be talking about things?
Well, I think we would talk about it whether it was a record or not. That's the point. I mean, let's say there were 31 were killed. Well, that's not a record, and would it mean we would ignore it? And then back in the 80s, you said, you know, things are getting worse. Well, in the 80s, I'm sorry, in the 80s, yes, we had a shooting with 21 were killed at a McDonald's restaurant. And then in the early 90s, there were 23 people killed at a restaurant in Texas. So, yes, this is maybe the largest, but I don't see any particular trend that says, oh, it's just spiraling out of control, because it's not.
Let's take a caller now. We have Dan on the line in Eau Claire. Dan, hi.
Hi. Great discussion, and I concur with your commentator's thoughts that it's going to be very difficult to prevent, unfortunately, these events. But I think maybe we could benefit from taking a different position by trying to control it. And what I mean by that is, in many of these settings, be it schools or churches, that if there was a trained, qualified person in that crowd that was security akin to the air marshals on flights, that could help control or mitigate it, you may not eliminate it, but you could dramatically reduce the carnage, I think.
Well, it's possible, of course. That's one argument that people want to make, that if more of us had guns, then we could intervene. But keep in mind that the Columbine High School had armed guards. Now, obviously, it was a very large school. It couldn't be everywhere. And one of the problems with the notion that having more citizens concealed weapons would be beneficial is that the killers, they always say how the killer was smiling. He was so cool and calm. Of course he's calm and cool, because he knew he was coming. He was planning this for weeks. The rest of us are caught by surprise. And the mayhem that can occur if let's say, for example, the theater shooting in Aurora, if a bunch of people start pulling out guns and shooting wildly in a darkened theater, it could be a lot of people could be caught in the crossfire. So it's not clear whether that would make us safer. Possibly in certain cases, and there have been cases of mass gunmen who've been overtaken by someone, but there are other cases where it would make it worse. And if you think about a club, I mean, I know in the state of Florida, they have concealed carry rights, but one of the exceptions is any place where alcohol is served, because clearly alcohol and guns don't mix very well. But I wouldn't see, for example, if they were allowed to have a gun, a whole bunch of people dancing with their skinny jeans packing heat. Wouldn't happen.
Dan, thanks a lot for joining us. We're going to go next to Bob in Grafton. Bob, hi.
Hi, Professor. Quite good. I'm a former intelligence officer, and the contrast between insurgencies and terrorism, and the way you divided up terrorism between those who are, be polite, mentally ill, and the terrorism from the outside, it was quite good.
Mm-hmm.
There are techniques to do it. Insurgency, we had the Phoenix program, but other similar type of ideas. But probably what we need is to ramp up our mental health expenditures to help those people who would do us harm.
You know, that's the right thing to do, but for the wrong reason. Do we really need to have a mass killing to say that we need to improve our mental health services? And one of the problems with that is, for example, Obama went to Connecticut right after the Sandy Hook shooting, and he said, we need to do something to help the mentally ill before it's too late. Now, the question is, Are we doing it because we're concerned about the well-being of the mentally ill, or are we doing it because we're concerned about the well-being of the people they may shoot? And if it's the latter, then we're really just adding to the stigma about being mentally ill and confusing it with mass murder and mentally ill together. Plus, what's true about mass killers is they don't think that they need help. They want treatment, but they want fair treatment. They don't want psychological treatment because they see themselves as victims of injustice. When things go wrong in their lives, they blame other people. So most of the people who have gone on these rampages would not take you up on the offer. But still, we should do it anyway. And if mass killings can motivate us to do the right thing, then that's wonderful. But let's do it for the right reason.
Bob, thank you so much for that call. And James, just very briefly before we wrap up here, are there changes that you would like to see?
Are there changes? Well, sure. I would like to see expanded mental health treatment, but not necessarily because it will solve the mass murder problem. I would like to see a variety of sensible gun control measures, because that would impact the kind of gun crime that we have every day on the streets of America. Will it impact mass killings? No. Mass killer, I mean, for example, background checks. Most of them pass a background check because they don't have a criminal record or a history of psychiatric treatment. And even if they didn't pass a background check, there's certainly many ways they can get their gun by beg, borrowing, or stealing it. They're very determined they'll find one. So if we can get better gun control because of these killings, that's great. But again, it's the right thing to do, but not for this reason.
James, thank you so much for joining us. It was James Allen Fox, Lippman Professor of Criminology, Law, and Public Policy at Northeastern University. I'm Veronica Rickert. Rob Ferret's out this week. You're listening to Central Time.